The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use our code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's TweakedAudio.com.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 108 for Wednesday, April 30th, 2014. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I get together to talk about the geeky stuff we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me this evening is none other than the now infamous new friend smell, Mike O'Day. How's it going, man?
Great, how you doing?
Been a long time.
I know, it's been so long.
Yeah, like less than 12 hours, no, 24 hours, something like that.
Not even, I don't think.
No, not even close. For those of you who are not in the know, I celebrated a birthday yesterday, and Mike was kind enough to come out and help me celebrate, because we both live in the same city, so went out for some beers and some food and some really interesting dessert and cocktails afterwards. It was a fun time.
We spent the night talking about how old you are.
Yes, great. Yeah, no, and that was mostly Peyton. That was mostly Peyton, and I'll set the record straight since he's not here to defend himself. I turned 35, and Peyton will turn 40 in June. And Jocelyn will be 30 in July, and she is not letting Peyton forget that he is 10 years older than she is. It's quite amusing. I enjoy watching it. I just kind of sit back and let the fireworks happen.
You just get to sit in the middle,
yep.
Literally.
Yep. Precisely. So yeah, I just wanted to take a minute to thank everybody. It's funny, like, not that you expect it, but it has become a normal thing on Facebook when you have your birthday. Everybody that's on Facebook with you is reminded by Facebook that it's your birthday, so you get a lot of wall posts, people saying happy birthday. However, I got a few personal emails, I got a few personal messages on Facebook, and I got a lot of tweets to say happy birthday. And that was really cool. I really appreciated it. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's
and,
really good.
Yeah. And I mean, we've only known each other for about 6 months. And I think last night was the first time that you met a good chunk of
90%.
Kind of, yeah, like my immediate friends here in the city. And there was a point last night where I don't remember what I was doing. I might have actually just come back from the restroom, but I wasn't involved in any of the conversation that was happening at the table. And it was really cool just to kind of lean back and realize that everybody at this table are, I would consider, like, my closest friends. Yet everybody is so busy that it usually takes a Christmas party, my birthday, or some other kind of big event to get people together, and never everybody at once. It's usually like, you know, four of us, six of us, whatever. And they're all from different avenues of my life. You know, like, I know Peyton from when we used to work together, and I'm really good friends with him and his wife. And I know, like, my friend, Laura and Gord, I went to university with Laura. So, I mean, like, all of these different paths, but you put everybody in the same room at the same table, and everybody just gets along fantastic.
Yeah.
And it was just really cool to see and just kind of revel in the quality and the, I guess, support that I have for my friends, because, you know, like, people had to get babysitters to come out on a Tuesday night for my birthday. You know, like, people have to rearrange their schedules. A couple people had other plans, but they still stopped by for a beer, and like, that stuff just means a lot to me. So, I mean,
yeah,
if anybody that's
really nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool. So if anybody that was there is listening that I didn't thank twice over last night, I'm sure I did. Thank you very much. It was a really, really good time. And also 35, buh. What the hell?
Middle of the road. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. I just, you know what? It snuck up on me. 29 was a big deal. 30, I didn't really care so much. Granted, I had a big party when I was 30. But, you know, like, I just, you know, 35 is just like, oh, yeah, okay. That's an interesting number. But in the road to here was just like a blur. Between 30 and 35, I went by in a heartbeat.
I don't even want to think about 29.
Yeah. Yeah, you're a young pup.
Well, I guess so.
Yeah.
I don't think of myself like that anymore.
No. Well, this is the thing. I mean, once you start getting into a situation where there are adult responsibilities that need to be taken care of, then you don't feel like a teenager anymore. You know, you don't feel like a student anymore.
Yeah. There's,
you know, when you've got to start, like, taking out the trash and, like, doing the job thing, whatever it is that your regular routine entails, it really kind of starts to feel, I don't know.
Adult.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I say that and I draw cartoons for a living. So, I mean, like, there's still a good part of my childhood that exists in my day-to-day, but you know, it's still work, you know.
That's like the best of both worlds, though.
Yeah.
Adulthood and cartoons.
Yeah, it can be. So I wanted to kick off this episode. We are going to be talking about Game of Thrones, and we've got some catch up to do. Some work stuff came up last week, and we just were not able to reschedule an episode. As much as I hate skipping a week when we've got this Game of Thrones stuff to cover, it just was essential that we do that. So it's also been 2 weeks since I really have mentioned anything else that I've been watching. And or doing, I guess. And I have just two quick mentions at the top of the show. I managed to take in Justice League War, which was it's a DC direct to DVD sort of release, I guess you could say direct to digital now, because they don't really, you can buy it on DVD, but I think they just call it like a direct to video production. And
they have a lot of those, I think.
Yeah, well, they do, and they're normally great. I normally highly recommend them. Crisis on Two Earths was fantastic. Like, there's a lot of these that are pretty good. Justice League War is utter shite. Don't watch it. They don't get it. It's really poorly written. It's based on the New 52.
Okay.
Superman is a righteous dick. Batman is Batman. They really don't mess with him that much. Wonder Woman is this Thor-like forsooth. And what is this thing you speak of called ice cream? This is amazing. Like, it's just like, oh God, like, could you put any more tropes into one movie? Like, it was
even
horrible.
Thor didn't do that stuff.
It exactly, right? and that's what she's like. She's like Thor, but like Thor if it was done by, like, you know, Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. Like, it's really, really bad. And I really don't recommend it, unfortunately, which is too bad, because, like, I mean, they obviously put a lot of money into these and they're animated well. There's lots of fighting and stuff, but they really missed the point of what the Justice League is supposed to be. And it was supposed to be some sort of origin story. So, I mean, like, they call Superman the alien for half the movie. Like, it really doesn't have the right spirit. If you're into Justice League and you want to catch up on Justice League, go watch Justice League Unlimited on Netflix. Like, they've got all the seasons, and it's much better.
I'll have to try and check that out instead then.
Yeah. Have you not seen that?
No, I haven't.
No, it's good. The Unlimited series gets into the extended universe, so like we're talking like B and C list heroes, so you might not recognize everybody that's on screen. I think like episode 2 or 3 has got like Hawk and Dove.
Okay.
And everybody's,
yeah,
like,
I'm not super well versed in DC stuff.
No, and everybody on the podcast is like, who and what now? And they're two brothers that are like, they're just fisticuffs. They punch people and they've got suits that let them fly, but it's just Hawk and Dove. Like, you couldn't get more. I mean, Hawk is okay, but Dove, like, just is not a. Not a very good, I guess, superhero, as far as I'm concerned.
It's also just a silly name.
It is. It's pretty dumb. And he's a pacifist. Like, he's always trying to find the political solution. It's like, dude, there's a reason why people like Superman. You know, like, he can punch stuff and ask questions later.
Or destroy an entire city.
Yeah. Well, there's that, you know. And the other thing that I've been doing, also in the realm of superheroes, which made up for the horrible failure that was Justice League War, is I finally had a chance to play Batman Arkham Origins, which I got for Christmas from Jocelyn.
I've heard good things about that.
Oh, dude. Okay, I cannot and will not spoil this game for anybody, because it was so enjoyable for me. But something I found so compelling is that these games, these kind of open world, but you still have a story mission to complete games, there's 100% of the game that you can partake in. And if you finish the story, that's usually only about a third. there's usually a lot of other things that you need to do in order to get, you know, 100%. So I realized that after completing Assassin's Creed Black Flag, and I was expecting the story to go on, and all of a sudden it wrapped up, because I wasn't ready mentally, because I was looking at my percentages thinking, oh, I'm 30% of the way through the game. I'm really not that close to the end. So I was thinking I was ending the you know, act one, and really what I was getting was the finale. But knowing that going into Batman, I knew as I was encroaching on like 25% and the fights and stuff that I was doing, I'm thinking, this is getting really meaty. Like, I'm getting to the end of this. And there's all these opportunities to go off and, you know, fight crime, save, you know, police officers from gang members. Like, there's these different side missions that have no real bearing on the story. But what they do is they give you more XP, which allows you to unlock different abilities for the Batarang and all this kind of stuff. And I didn't do hardly any of them. The story was so compelling. The voice acting is fantastic. The story is twisted. Like, it is, they did a really good job of telling you what the basic premise was in the trailers. So you go in there and they set that up and then they start messing with you. And it's great. You have to be a detective, which is amazing. It's not just, you know, beating guys into submission, right?
Is the combat system the same as the other ones?
Yeah. It wasn't broken, so they didn't fix it.
Good.
If anything, I actually think it might be a little bit better. I still can't master one move, which really pisses me off, which is the knife takedown. I cannot figure out how to do that. The system is basically you have to avoid the knife attack by holding down your counter button and away from the attacker, and then you're supposed to tap it at the right moment. And I've tried every frickin' moment possible, and I just can't figure out how to do it. Eventually you just start beating people into submission. And that's something that this game does excel at, too. Like, I mean, if you've played any of the Arkham series, Arkham Asylum was very cool. Arkham City was better. The combat, I thought, was jarring at first, but once you got used to it, it was a step up. And this is just a refinement. They really didn't change very much. So if you've played Arkham City recently, then there's a lot of muscle memory that'll kick right in when you're fighting a bunch of guys.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and they make you feel like such a badass. It's it's one of these great games where there's a lot of different combos that you can do, but there is a punch button and there's a counter button. And so you do these different moves at the right time, but like, it's a different animation every time Batman turns around. So it's not like you're just always doing like this right hand haymaker or like a sidekick all the time. Like, you kick a guy's shin and you punch him in the throat, and then the guy comes up beside you and you break his kneecap, and then, you know, the other guy comes too, so you punch him in the gut. Like, it just, and you're constantly just switching around and doing all this stuff. And,
yeah, they made a really good job of making sure it didn't, even though you're really hitting the same stuff, it's not repetitive animation.
No, exactly. And because the AI in this game is also improved, like, you have really got to watch what people are doing. You know, like, if you disarm a guy and you knock him out, his buddy will pick up the weapon, and that can be bad, because like, some of these guys have armor, and then the next thing you know, the armored guy's got a bat, and you're just like, well, shit, like, this isn't good. But yeah, it's fantastic. I highly recommend picking it up. It's still, I think, in and around $40 if you've got it brand new. It might be less if you got it used.
On Steam and stuff?
It is on Steam. That's how I played. I prefer the couch and the controller experience. So we moved the Jocelyn's old computer into the living room and hooked it up to the TV. So it was not much different than playing on the Xbox, with the exception that I couldn't get surround sound. Which the Xbox does deliver. So, the graphics were pretty good. Jocelyn's computer has got a good card and some good RAM, but it's not, you know, it's not a doghouse. On a doghouse, you could probably crank this thing and it would look amazing. But there's things like, you know, there's footprints in the snow so you can follow people and like things like that are very cool.
It's still like the detective mode or whatever. What was it called?
There's the detective mode when you turn on your cowl and you can see, like, you know, people's skeletons. It indicates which one of those guys has a gun and all that kind of stuff. It lets you to see through walls to see people. But the better part of it is the real detective part is when you arrive at a crime scene, they're marked by a special area, and when you switch on your detective vision, you can actually use your cowl to recreate the crime scene and then fast forward and rewind to review the evidence. So he creates like a virtual reality the car went here, it was going approximately 78 miles an hour when it hit the guy, and then there's blood splatter. So you start off at, you know, point X, which could have been at the time of death, or the scene of the crime might be at the scene of impact, or like for what, you know, whatever this happens to be, you know, using a hit and run as an example. And then you have to figure out, okay, well, if he was hit by the car here, I know where the body lands, but what potentially did he hit between here and there? And, you know, your bat computer does the calculations, you know, based on, you know, where he was standing and how fast the car was going and snow and all this kind of stuff. So then you have to review the crime scene, find another clue that then reveals more of the crime scene, either at the beginning or at the end of your little kind of recreation. And eventually you end up with an ID and, you know, the last known whereabouts of person, you know, suspect X or Y, and then you got to go find them and bring them to justice. And all of this stuff is just, you're just listing in on police scanners, you know, so you really feel like you're doing like the Batman stuff. It's very, very cool.
That's really awesome. It's way better than the other ones.
Yeah. Well, they took what was good and they built on it. There are a couple things, you know, as far as fighting, where it's just like some of the boss battles are a little repetitive and you're just like, okay, well, I know what I have to do to win. And there doesn't appear to be any other way to win, if that makes any sense. Like,
kind of, yeah.
You know, like if there's a certain mechanic where you have to dodge the charge and then cape stun and then beat the guy into submission. And you're just like, okay, well, what if I wanted to throw batarangs at him? Or what if I wanted to try my other takedown moves that I've unlocked and all this kind of stuff? It doesn't work. You have to just do this. All right, you know, dodge, 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 stun, hit, repeat. You know, do that 3 times. And then, you know, I mean, you might as well jump on his head 3 times like Mario and call it.
Yeah, I was going to say it's almost like that.
Yeah, like it's very, very similar in that. Not all of them, but some of them were not so good.
So do you get like the whole like plethora like of villains?
Mm-hmm. So the plot, which is not a secret, is that Black Mask has hired 8 Batman villains to try to assassinate you. Off the top of my head, if I can remember, it's Bane, Deathstroke, Deadshot, Copperhead, and in this version of Copperhead, it's a girl.
Okay.
Who was the other one? Some other girl that seems to be the League of Shadows, but they don't really know. I didn't recognize her name.
Talia al Ghul or something?
No, it's somebody else. I would have recognized Talia. And then there is some guy like Shockwave or Shocker. He's got a pair of shock gloves. And he really is a B-list villain.
Shocker and he was a Spider-Man villain, wasn't he?
Yeah, so I've got the name wrong. I don't remember the guy's name. Again, because he's just, like, everybody that I've talked to is just like, who's this guy? Like, I'm sure he was in the comics, but they kind of pulled a B-list because I think they didn't want to get too into the main villains because I think perhaps in the release coming this fall, Batman Arkham Knight.
Yeah, they got to make another game.
So yeah, so they're going to have to choose, you know, who's going to be the main villain. So, I mean, like, they didn't touch on the whole canon of Batman because I think that they wanted to stay a little bit more real. It's very realistic. It's not so cartoony.
Is Deathstroke awesome?
Yes.
Because I'm watching the Arrow, the show on TV Arrow, and he's so good in that.
Okay, so we've only watched the first 4 episodes of season 2.
Okay.
For Arrow, and we just did that today. So
season 2 is so much better than season 1.
Really? Because I was having a hard time getting on board
just
for season 2.
Give it a little bit longer.
Okay.
It'll get really good.
Yeah. There's a couple things about Arrow that are really kind of campy.
Yeah.
It
seems to get less campy though as you go. Like,
yeah,
the very end of the first season was very not campy and very awesome.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, agreed.
The second season starts off a bit campy, and then about, I don't know, a quarter of the way in, you're just like, okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
You found it.
And I feel like they do that.
Catherine wanted to yell in that it's still campy.
Oh, it's still campy. it's been so long since I've seen season 1, I think I forgot how campy it was.
Yes.
So that I was expecting serious, and, you know, I wasn't ready for campy, but as we watched a couple more, you kind of like, okay, right, I remember how funny Felicity is and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and they sort of find, like, all the actors find, and actresses find their, like, their footing, for the most part. Most of them do anyway. Like, what's his name? The guy who plays Arrow, Stephen Amell. He right. does that. He gets much, much better.
Yes.
It's really not that great in the beginning.
No. No. Same with, there was somebody else that wasn't so shit hot. I don't really, really like Laurel, the main,
yeah, main girl. No, me either. She's quite hateful.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't say who it is without spoilers, so I'll talk to you about it after the show.
All right.
I don't want to mess anybody up. But yeah, so that's what I've been up to. What have you been up to the last little while?
Not a whole lot. I haven't had a whole lot of time to actually do anything super enjoyable. I did get a new iPad, and I was playing Hearthstone on that, and that's just awesome.
Nice.
It runs so well, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah, my mom's playing Hearthstone, and she's got a Retina screen, and I hate her. It's so pretty.
It looks better than anything else.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The gold cards on it is like, oh yeah, okay. You got it.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, although I have to say, Hearthstone did an update yesterday.
Yep.
And there was also an iOS update on the iPad over the weekend, maybe. And I have found in the last 24 hours or so that Hearthstone runs much better on the iPad 2.
Oh, good.
It doesn't crash.
That was the biggest complaint I heard about people on the older versions.
I only lost one match due to a crash, but my play experience was really slow because I would win or lose a match, and then before I could go back to the screen to play again, the game would crash. So then you have to load it up, wait, load up your character, wait, start a new match, wait. This seems to be much closer to the PC experience as far as speed.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That's so really good to hear.
Yeah, I'm happy about that because I mean, if there was ever motivation to buy a new iPad, that was
I can attest for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and see, and the other thing too is like, I really wanted to start doing some plein air painting last year, and I can't because the iPad 2 is just too slow for on-screen painting with stylus and whatnot.
What type of apps do you use for that?
Like Sketchbook Pro. There's one just called Painter.
Okay.
And there's a couple of others that I've picked up, and they're cheap. You know, all of them are under $10. So they're robust apps. Like they've got, you know, texture and brushes, and they're not really pressure sensitive, but that's okay for painting. You can change like it's like a system that will have something like brush load. So your stroke can only go so far before your paintbrush kind of quote unquote runs out of paint.
Cool.
So it doesn't end up looking like, you know, really digital. It does kind of have a painterly feel to it. And what I was hoping is that I could do it on the iPad 2, even though it doesn't have a Retina screen. But using a Retina screen, one, will have a much clearer, you know, view of what I want to do. But the processor speed in the new iPads is just, it's just that much better that I think that would be the main difference. So
I would agree.
Yeah.
The new ones are 64-bit, so they're more future-proof for later, and they're just going to be so much faster at doing more stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, of course, all of those paint apps that I have, you know, versions that work on the new iPads, so they take advantage of the architecture and stuff. So, yeah, those are my two main reasons, is that, you know, like, I finally have an iPad game that was free and is really, really good, you know, so it's going to be nice to kick back and enjoy that now that I don't have to worry about being disconnected all the time.
Yeah, that'll be great. We'll have to play again.
Mm, yeah. Yeah, Jocelyn helped me build a Zulok deck.
Yes, you were saying yesterday.
Yeah, so I'm enjoying that. It's a different mentality than the Warrior that I've been playing.
It's a very different, but yeah, it's more just like throw everything down and just let it happen. Then when
you
kill all that, you throw more stuff down.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much. Right on. Well, if you're ready, we can jump into the Winter is Coming segment.
Excellent.
Okay, so folks, this is where we warn you that we are about to spoil Game of Thrones as it appears on HBO. If you have not seen episode 3, Breaker of Chains, or episode 4, Oathkeeper, which is just this past week's episode, you should probably turn this podcast off now and come back to us later because we're going to talk about all kinds of really good, juicy details and what we thought about those episodes. We We do this every week, and we will continue until the end of the season. And again, as I mentioned, we normally do one show per episode, so we're going to be smashing episode 3 and 4 together today. But I think the easiest thing to do, Mike, would probably just go through episode 3, and then we'll go through episode 4 as to what we thought was is worth mentioning.
Yeah. Luckily, season 3 was kind of light, or episode 3 was kind of light anyway.
Yes. Yeah. I think they both were kind of light as far as, you know, action and real drama was concerned. There's a lot of posturing, but, you know, it was pretty...
Well, they can't throttle your emotions every single week. So.
Yeah. They might try, but yeah. They do have to have some breaths in there.
Absolutely.
So as I mentioned, episode 3 was titled Breaker of Chains, and the summary is as follows. In the frenzied aftermath of the royal wedding, Tyrion gets a visit from a loyal subject, but wonders if anyone in his family will help him out of his current predicament. Meanwhile, Tywin offers to work for the common good with a presumed enemy. Sam takes stock of personnel at Castle Black. The Hound gives another life lesson to Arya, and Daenerys makes a decision outside the walls of Meereen. Well, I think we can probably start right at the top. This is one of those few episodes where they pick up kind of right where you left off.
Yeah.
Joffrey is dead as a doornail, lying across the Sept altar for visitation. Cersei is crying by his side, even though we don't feel sorry for her at all. But the thing that grabbed me right off the top of the episode was the speech/conversation between Tywin and Tommen.
Yes, who was going to be my favorite part of the whole episode.
Yeah, Tywin just has such presence, but when he's speaking in these terms, you know, what makes a good king, and each answer that Tommen gives Tywin leads to a story about a past king that was passionate or pious or... strong
or wise,
and wisdom is the one that Tywin zeroes in on, mm-hmm. and obviously not well. I mean, one, because it is a good answer, but two, it also means that, you know, he's encouraging Tommen to always trust his advisors and
aka him,
yeah, and, you know, rely on the hand of the king to make decisions, not necessarily for you, but to learn from your elders and all this kind of stuff. So he's I'm certainly hopeful of Tommen to be a more, not merciful, but at least a little more balanced.
Less of a little shit.
Mm.
The whole time we were watching that, we just kept thinking, wow, he's going to be a nice little boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like they played him a little bit older in the series than they did in the book. I thought he was only like 8 or something.
He was very young in the books.
Yeah. Because he was a child king was, I think, one of the terms they used to...
I think all of them were really, like, even younger in the books than they are in the show.
Oh, yeah, I think everybody across the board. I mean, Sansa is only supposed to be 14 or 15, so Arya is, like, 10 or 12.
Yes.
You know, and so they've kind of pushed everybody up by, like, 4 years.
Just to make it a little easier to do. And mm-hmm. some of the things that happen to those people, it's even worse. You're like, what happened to a 10-year-old?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I thought that was a really, really strong way to kind of start off the show. And then they don't waste any time getting into see Tyrion's predicament in the dungeon, where, I mean, he has to say goodbye to Pod, and he's talking to Bronn and trying to figure out, you know, how to get in touch with Jaime to get Jaime to come and talk to him and all this kind of stuff. And you really start to feel that Tyrion just does not have any allies that are willing to go up against Tyrion's sister and his father.
Yeah, which is, well, no matter, even if you're super loyal to Tyrion, it's kind of hard to really not be intimidated.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I heard some people on other podcasts speculating that they thought that Tywin was the one that was behind Joffrey's murder.
Right.
Just because he has the most to gain while, you know, the Hand of the King. Yet it does not completely dissolve his family from, you know, the rule, because Tommen simply just inherits what Joffrey, you know, gives up in death.
Yeah.
And I thought that was an interesting theory.
But also, I think they also, I've heard people mention that point there, also to say, like, Joffrey was also just, you couldn't control him.
Well, yeah.
He was so unpredictable, and he would do whatever the crap he wanted.
Yeah.
Tywin wants that when he can control.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So the other, I guess moving over to Stannis and Davos, speaking about kings and hands, I'm really starting to tire of Stannis Baratheon's drivel. Like, he's borderline religious zealot. His wife is bad enough. But he just seems to have this belief that, you know, the Red Witch is guiding his destiny as to what he's going to do in order to take back King's Landing. And it never ceases to amaze me in the stupidity of his plans. But I really enjoyed Davos. He's probably one of my favorite characters in the book.
Yeah, he's a fantastic character for sure.
Yeah.
And his daughter.
Yes, Shireen. Actually, that's something that I wanted to mention was Davos's relationship with Shireen is a lot of fun. It's one of those small moments where they can work some humor into Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and she's probably the only character I can really think of, maybe other than Tommen, that's just still very innocent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And very naive.
Yeah, but smart for her age.
Yes.
You know, and takes a lot of pride in that she can read, and this, you know, 50-year-old man with, you know, who as the hand of the king and has a sword on his side, is someone that she is now teaching to read and write. And it's
just cute.
Yeah, and they have a nice relationship in that, even though she's essentially the princess, as far as, you know, Dragonstone is concerned, he can talk back to her. Like, he still gives her shit, follows it up with "Your Grace," and she kind of looks at him like, "You're incorrigible," you know. Like, it just, it's nice that she doesn't snap at him like, "You can't talk to me like that," because that's how any of the other kids that we've seen in the series would react. Like, even Sansa, you know, well, maybe she not would now,
definitely do that.
But like earlier, she would certainly be like, "You can't talk to me like that." And it's like, well, it's called joking around. Like, it's called a sense of humor, and I feel like Shireen really gets that.
Yeah, absolutely. Their rapport is fantastic.
Yeah. So what did you think about the little stint there with Arya and the Hound as they're proceeding north?
I kind of just love every scene they have together. It's always so awesome because you can always just see that she's there. She doesn't like that she's there, but she's putting up with him. Mm-hmm. And they always just banter back and forth, and they always have the best lines of the show. And it always looks like there's, you know, I think I might be jumping ahead, but it always looks like he's maybe almost turning into a nicer person, and then he backtracks a little.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I know we've mentioned, you know, a lot of gray, you know, areas in Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Know, over the last couple episodes.
He is the grayest.
Yeah. Yeah, and I feel like he's gray, but he's a selfish gray.
Yes, he's more, I guess if he was in D&D, he'd be like chaotic neutral. Would that be the alignment? I don't.
Yeah, yeah, I guess so.
It's like, I'll do what I want, but only if it helps me.
Yeah, yeah, and he's not, I mean, like, people were really upset. I mean, like, I was quick to point out, like, well, he didn't kill the farmer.
No.
He just robbed him, you know? Like, he goes as far as he needs to.
He could have killed the farmer.
Yeah. A lot of people force his hand, I think, is the what we're used to seeing is him running people through.
Yeah, because the last people, they were jerks.
Yeah, well, they're giant dicks. Trying to take his chicken. I mean, geez.
Well, he got every chicken in the place, so
you don't come between a man and his chicken. I like that Arya is also showing how smart she is. You know, like, quickly fibbing that it's her dad and that they were part of the war and they're fleeing and all this kind of stuff. And the guy
was very street smart.
Yeah, no, it's cool to see that kind of savvy, you know, like, I have to use my brain to get myself out of trouble because I'm not yet to the point where I can meet trouble head on and physically deal with it, you know?
Although she is getting there for that.
Well, yeah, there is that too. Yeah, there is that.
But of like all of her siblings, I'd say she's the most, the smartest out of all of them. Mm-hmm. Because she's able to just think on her feet like that and just stay ahead more so than anyone else.
Yeah, she's usually the one setting the pace.
Yeah.
In her scenes and in her storyline, with the exception of maybe like when she was first set out from King's Landing as part of, like, she was supposed to be going to the Night's Watch.
Yeah.
Or pretending to go to the Night's Watch. That was about the only time that, like, really that band of riffraff was kind of dictating where she was going.
Yeah.
But once she was, like, into, was it Harrenhal, where she was Tywin's table
that
maid?
That was also another fantastic pairing.
So yes.
Arya and the Hound is great, but Arya and Tywin was amazing too.
Yeah, no, I remember Jocelyn and I would revel in those scenes. They were just so good.
I don't think they were in the books either.
No, and
that was an addition.
No, I think you're correct. And we are really treading into some territory in the HBO series that either in, like, technically they're kind of in the middle of book three as far as the main timeline is concerned.
Yeah.
But they are pulling from book three, book four, book five.
Kind of have to, though, the way the other books worked.
And I agree. And I think
without spoiling anything, but it just kind of like it happens in one half and then the next book just takes off what happened as if it was at the beginning of the fourth book, but with different people.
And I would even suggest that some of the events in book five possibly could have even been set in motion while everything was happening in book three.
Yeah.
So why not allude to that? Like, why not start tying everything together? And I think that, you know, Martin and the producers of the show might be taking advantage of having a second go, much like...
I think Martin might be as well.
Yeah, yeah. Just like Kirkman with Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. I've seen him interviewed where he says, like, you know, I get a chance... Like, print is forever. Like, once it's done in the book, it's canon. Comics, people are serious about this stuff. But with TV, I have a chance to interpret my own work and say, I didn't like that decision of, you know, killing character X or having this happen just quite this way. So what would happen if this happened differently and these relationships were forced in a different direction? And, you know, I don't think he's necessarily changing the outcome of Walking Dead. But,
just the flavor.
Yeah, exactly. Or like the timing of things. And I think that's what they might be doing with Game of Thrones.
Which would make sense.
And it makes it more fun for people like you and I who've read the books.
Yeah, exactly.
Because now we're guessing.
Things happen and you're like, oh, I didn't expect this to happen now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly. Speaking of the Stark kids, Sansa gets away.
Weird. Creepy little finger.
Creepy little finger who... I got, like, nothing about this guy. I mean, Jocelyn pipes up every time he's on screen. And she's just like, how on God's green earth does anyone ever trust him? He doesn't try to hide. He opens his mouth and it's just a forked tongue the whole time.
Oh, my God. It's even his voice. He's just like, hello.
Yeah, yeah.
You're like,
I'm
okay.
A villain. Nothing is going to come good of what I'm about to say.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of funny, but he's always very honest, like, when he told Sandy, like, you shouldn't actually trust anyone. You shouldn't even trust me. But I'm going to tell you all this stuff.
Well, and that's the other thing that I find really kind of good and bad about stuff like this in TV and some of the villains is that, like, if he's that smart, like, why is he telling Sansa his evil plots?
I think he has a soft spot for her, though, because of his mother.
Well, her mother. And they're doing a good job of, like, is it a soft spot because he loved her mother? Or is it a soft spot because he looks at her and sees her mother?
Yeah.
And is now gunning for Sansa as opposed to Lysa. Or, I'm going to marry Lysa, get the Aerie, and then going to have an affair or try to have an affair with Sansa. Like, just, the whole thing, he just makes my skin crawl.
So, I think that's his point.
Yeah, though. And again, kudos to the actor, because, I mean, he does in the books, too, and the actor that plays him is doing a very good job.
Oh, yeah, that guy
job.
Kills it every time.
Yeah. I think that two of the best portrayals of characters in the book, as far as, like, the... Not the over-the-top characters, but the very distinct archetypes are Littlefinger and Varys.
Yes, the guy who plays Lord Varys is... I was just going to say that he's perfect.
Yeah.
He's just creepy enough.
Spiders everywhere.
Yeah, he has little birds.
Yeah. In the north, we saw Jon Snow make lots of cool, valid points about strategy, and everybody just dismisses him. I grow tired of this immensely. I want, is it Alistair? What's the guy's name?
Alistair Thorne.
Thorne, yep. I want him to jump off the top of the wall. Can't stand that guy
maybe
at all.
I'll push him off the top of the wall.
Yeah, you never know.
Who knows?
I know at least I'm to the point now where I kind of don't remember how all that kind of stuff pans out, but like, oh my God, I just, the guy, the actor, it just makes you want to throttle people. It's one of the worst things, and something that Jocelyn and I are discovering as we watch, you know, Game of Thrones and other new shows, one of the most irritating things for us as a viewer is watching a character that doesn't listen. You know, like, John is making valid points about the deserters and the information that they have about you know, and they are just like, you're a fool. Like, you thought, and they're looking at him, and they're pissed off because he thought of it before they did.
Yeah, but so there's just going to be stubborn asses and not do anything.
Exactly. But stubborn asses, but also they just dismiss him, and they do not listen, and it drives us crazy. I mean, it's a good plot device. Like, I mean, it really gets under people's skin. But it's something that we find true of a lot of shows. There's always that one character that's just, you know, so hell-bent on whatever their mission is that they don't listen to anybody else.
Always, yeah. But we'll get to talk more about Jon Snow in the next episode anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
He gets less dismissed.
Yes, yeah, no, and that's where I was going with that too, is that when we get to the episode 4, things start to kind of turn around. I think the other thing is that you just get so invested in these episodes that it feels like forever. Even though it's only been 3 episodes this season, he's been basically being shunned for 3 episodes. And you're just kind of like, ah, when is John going to be, when are they going to listen, you idiots? And it's like, you're not even halfway through the season.
Not you know? Even, yeah. No.
And this one had a nice ending. I like the way that they wrapped it up with Daenerys. Despite the pissing contest.
Oh, it was great. It was hilarious.
It was funny. I prefer the smart, savvy Dario Naharis.
Right. This is the scene where the guy's like screaming at everyone in a language no one understands. And he's just like
pissing all over the place.
Taking a leak all over the ground.
Yeah. No, I remember the only thing that I think I remember differently from the book is I thought that fight went on for longer.
I think it was more of a fight. I think did he like just threw his sword or something? Like, or he hit the horse, right?
He threw a dagger and hit the horse in the eye.
Right.
And the horse goes down like a bucket of bolts. And then
knocks the other guy over.
And I don't remember what he did with the other guy. Did he spear him? He kills him, but he must
have killed him. I can't remember now.
Oh, he kills him, but he kills him really fast.
It reminded me of that scene in Indiana Jones where the guy like flaming the sword everywhere and he goes, oh, I need to shoot something.
Yeah. You know the story behind that, right?
Yeah, where he was sick and he's like, can I just shoot him?
I guess so.
Too much. And it was like the greatest scene in the movie.
Bad food. You've got to run to the bathroom. Like, you really got to go. And you're just kind of like, I'm just going to shoot him so I can go to the bathroom.
But it was perfect anyway. It's way better than having Indiana Jones having an epic fight, like sword fight or something.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I like the fact that Jones didn't have sword play. Like, that wasn't one of the things that he could do.
No, but the whole idea was he's very smart and, you know, good at puzzles and whips and such.
Yeah.
And he hated snakes.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, any final thoughts on episode 3?
No, we kind of said it all was very light and it just like... It kind of just showed the aftermath of the, what do they call it, the Purple Wedding?
The Purple Wedding is what they're calling it.
Yeah, the aftermath of the Purple Wedding. And it showed a lot of good, like, conversations and stuff, but nothing groundbreaking, I guess. No.
I did like the catapults full of slave chains, slave
powers. Oh, yeah.
I thought that was really well done. And we can talk about this more in the next episode, but I really like how Daenerys is taking Meereen.
By sneaking in?
Well, just by not just... She has the force, but she's not just going full frontal.
Oh, like beating down
attack,
the door.
Right? Because she doesn't want any casualties.
Right. Yeah, she wants to turn the actual slaves against the.
Yeah. It's smart. Like, I really enjoy. It's no wonder that she has so many followers.
Yeah.
You know, because she's empowering people, not necessarily saving them, and I think that's what I really like about what she's doing. So.
It's very smart.
Yeah. So the next episode, Oathkeeper, episode 4, Dany balances justice and mercy, as we were saying. Jaime tasks Brienne with his honor. Jon secures volunteers while Bran, Jojen, Mira, and Hodor stumble on shelter. I don't know where to start with this one. I guess we were talking about Dany, so we could probably start there. Daenerys sends her Unsullied into the sewers.
Yeah, it's Grey Worm, and does anyone else go in there with him, or is it just a bunch of Unsullied?
It's just a bunch of Unsullied, and I could have sworn it was different in the books.
The books, Jorah and so Old and Older go with them.
Yeah.
Jorah and Sir Barristan.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was punishment for something too, I thought.
I think so, yeah. They were bickering or something. Or
yeah, there was some sort of fight that was going on. So she decided, like, well, prove yourself to me and go in there. So, you know, he had to kind of lower himself and go into a sewer and sneak around as opposed to, like, you know, fighting like a knight. But yeah, I really enjoyed that. You know, like, they show up, they talk to the slaves, and they bring the slaves weapons. And then the masters are quickly overrun by the slaves fighting them and taking them down. And
the writing was on the wall.
Yeah.
I really like that too.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool too. And then I really enjoyed that when they looked up at their pyramid and the, I guess it's like a Sphinx maybe.
I think it's a harpy.
Is it a harpy? Okay.
So you know the sons of the harpy? It's the harpy.
Oh, okay.
And it had the Targaryen flag hung on it.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty slick.
That was awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed that quite a bit. So yeah, it was nice to see. I like how they're battling with Daenerys, where, you know, she fully intends to, and I guess, well, no, she followed through with crucifying the masters, much like the 163 markers of child slaves.
Yep.
That she saw, coming into Meereen. And despite, I think it was Barristan that.
Yeah. I was gonna say, I did agree with Selmy that she shouldn't have done it.
Yeah, I agree too. Yeah, I think it would have been better to just toss him out the front gate, wish him well, and say bye.
Yeah.
You know, like, although, you're on your own.
Granted, if you think on it, like, if she lets them leave, it gives them time to come up with a plan and try and take it back.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think there's... It seems out of character.
It's very Targaryen, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and part of it, I guess, is just, you know, as her journey continues, she becomes more and more like a queen.
Yeah.
And less contested, even in her own court. So some of the decisions she makes seems to be, you know, that show of power. So every once in a while you have that flash of, you know, she unleashes the dragons and frees the Unsullied. And like that was like in last season, that was another kind of like you're cheering from the couch moment. This one wasn't necessarily cheering from the couch moment. This was kind of like a, oh, okay. So we don't mess with Daenerys.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
You know, just happy to follow her, but you really got to think twice about crossing her too.
Yeah.
So
she's just not a little girl.
Yeah. It's been a couple episodes without dragons too. I'm looking forward to seeing them again.
Yeah. It'll be good. I'm glad they're not always there, because then it's not as impact, like such an impact when you do see them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel like there's a lot of imagery in my head from the book about Drogon kind of like using that harpy as kind of his perch.
I think so.
Yeah. So I thought that, I think that might be something cool. And there's all, I think she has to chain them up at some point too.
She does. Yeah. But that's, we're into like very deep into non-TV.
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah. So it's again, it's hard to...
It's gelled together.
Yeah, yeah, it's kind of...
I only know just because I just read that.
Yeah, well, and... The fifth one. And she's in... I mean, like, Meereen is something that I remember, but I just, like, I don't remember anything else. So it's hard to kind of...
Well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of shake what city is where, because, I mean, and it sounds bad, but, like, they've got different names, but they all kind of sound the same.
Oh, it's all slaves and
flavors and
not Westeros.
Yeah.
Which is where she should be.
Yeah. So I guess the other thing we touched on just a few minutes ago was Jon.
Yep.
So Jon is finally granted permission to go north of the wall, despite the fact that he's just a steward. Alistair is trying to get rid of him. Thorne is trying to send him to his death.
Yeah, he was hoping that no one would go with him,
because
he was just like, you know, hey, you could definitely go if you can get, I'm not going to order anyone to go with you. You have to get volunteers, which was a really cool scene to see everyone, you know, him, this roaring speech about why they have to go there, where they're going and how dangerous it is. Mm. And anyone that wants to follow him, just stand up, and eventually, you know, they start poking their heads up like, hi.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was interesting that is it Janus Slynt?
Janus Slynt, yeah, the guy from was he in the Gold Cloaks?
I'm thinking about somebody else then.
The
Locke. I'm thinking about Locke.
Oh yeah, so the guy who isn't he
cut off Jamie's hand.
Cut off Jamie's hand.
Yeah. So Jocelyn and I were trying to remember where he was from. I mean, we knew that he cut off Jamie's hand.
So he was, I think, and he works for Roose Bolton, doesn't he?
We couldn't decide if he worked for Roose Bolton or if he worked for the Mountain. I thought he worked for the Mountain and thus was working under Tywin. But that doesn't make any
sense. So I remember that this guy is a replacement for the Bloody Mummers, right?
I guess so.
So the people who cut off his hand in the books.
Right.
What was his name? Something Vogt?
Vargo Hoat.
That's it. So this is him, technically, I guess. Mm. So I can't remember if he worked for Roose Bolton or for... I remember him being in Harrenhal a lot, so he may have worked for Tywin.
Yeah, but that doesn't seem like it would make sense if he cut off Jamie's hand, right?
It's true, so he must work for Roose Bolton.
Yeah. Yeah, geez, Bolton's going to have a lot of problems with all these people cutting off body parts of prisoners that are really important.
Yeah, he's not having good luck with that.
No, not at all.
Stressing the wrong people.
Not at all. Because Roose Bolton only just switched sides last season.
Yes, at the Red Wedding.
Mm. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm...
Because he's now the Lord of Harrenhal, right?
Maybe the guy was working for the Mountain and just was like there. All of them were just defective. Maybe they weren't really following Tywin's orders. Maybe the Mountain was calling the shots.
That's possible.
You know, like again, it's been so long. So
I'm not totally. I don't know. I'm sure you'll get a correction from somebody.
Well, I was just about to say. I mean, thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. If you know better than us, or remember,
someone's
going to
be like,
us,
dude, what do you do? What,
I mean, I know I could look it up on Wikipedia, but I just, you know, it's. I find it's important to just rely on what I remember and just rely on what I've been reminded of with the TV show, because that's what the majority of people have as their information, right?
Yeah.
So it's hard to kind of, especially when you get into like the secondary and other tertiary characters and just, God,
yeah, I don't know. I shouldn't have even mentioned that other guy. He's not even in the show.
No. No, but well, I mean, that's where we're coming from. We're coming from knowing the books and trying to figure out who this person is in the show. And if it's the same name, your brain would go, oh, okay, cool. I know who he is. I know what he works for.
Yeah.
But because he's got a different name, you're just like, I don't remember. Because, like, you know, it's because names are repeated quite often when you're reading the book. And if they change them in the TV show, it gets a little bit confusing.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the things that they did differently, again, was revealing who murdered Joffrey.
Yeah, I was really surprised about that.
Very early on. I was expecting that to be... Well, one, it was a longer wait in the books. And
did
even
they
then,
even reveal it in the books? They never even went out and said it.
No, this is the thing. They hint. They leave the breadcrumbs in the book and they really kind of point you in the right direction.
Yeah.
And it is... They point you in the direction of who they point out quite clearly in the TV show.
Yeah, they spell it out.
Yeah, in that Littlefinger in his monologue to Sansa about his giant, amazing, evil scheme, says that it was a combination of his resources
and his new friend.
And his new friends, you know, the Tyrells.
Yeah.
And he doesn't say Tyrells.
No.
And that's, I think, one of the things about the show is that it can be a little bit confusing. It was like, you're listening to his words, but you're seeing images. So as you're still hearing Littlefinger's words, they cut to a scene of Margaery and Olenna walking through the gardens. And so you are immediately led visually to who he's talking about, even though he doesn't say it aloud.
Yeah, you infer very quickly.
Yeah, so they really kind of line it up for you. And then, of course, there's a conversation between Olenna and Margaery where Olenna just says, like, do you really think I was going to let you marry that little twerp? Are you kidding? That's ridiculous. You deserve so much better than that. And it was very, very cut and dry. I was surprised, knowing how TV shows normally drag that kind of mystery out a little bit, that we didn't even get an episode. Like, it was
yeah,
just...
Yeah, this is not the typical TV show, but I was surprised they even went out and said it, because usually this show is so good at, just like the books, where they kind of just assume, you're intelligent enough, you figure it out.
Yeah.
We're not going to just say it for you.
Yeah, it's not like the WB where you've got lines from Arrow where it's just like, you're going to get yourself, you know, you're going out every night and you're trying to get yourself killed. And you know what? someday it's going to happen. And you're just kind of like, wow, that was brilliant. I never saw that line coming a mile away. You sound so concerned. Like, it just, that kind of stuff is just, that doesn't often happen in Game of Thrones.
No, not at all.
Something that I did mention to Jocelyn and she agreed was that knowing right away that Olenna was involved in poisoning Joffrey, either directly or indirectly, will make the rest of Tyrion's trial that much more interesting.
Torturous.
Well, that much more interesting from a viewer's perspective, because you know 100% he's innocent.
Yeah.
You know, like, you kind of knew anyway, but now you absolutely know that he's innocent, and there's a bunch of other people in the show that just either don't know or don't care.
Yeah, and you know that his it's obvious that Cersei and Tywin are just gunning to get rid of him.
Yeah, precisely, right? So I think that that is going to be, it's going to make his trial and the way that that develops a little bit more interesting. You know, as far as the TV show is concerned.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
And the little scene with him and Jamie was really cool too.
I really enjoyed that. Yeah. I like the rapport that Jamie and him have, and they set that up very early on, like episode one, when Tyrion was in the whorehouse in the first season and Jamie comes in with like even more girls and all that kind of stuff. They have that kind of back and forth that seemed really, brotherly, for the lack of a better term, very chummy. And I feel like the conversation that Bronn had with Jamie when they were practicing their swordplay down by the water was...
That was done really well.
Really, yeah, really well done, too, when Bronn reminds Jamie that, you know, Tyrion requested you the first time he was on trial when he was asked to summon a champion, because he knew you would ride across, you know, king and country to get to him.
Yeah.
And, you know...
He's like, and why aren't you going to him and see him now?
Yeah. Yeah, and I thought that was really well done too. I really enjoy Bronn, like, and Jamie as well. Like the three of them have a very dynamic, witty kind of rapport.
Yeah,
that I find very entertaining.
That's my favorite part about the show, is when they take, because that didn't happen in the books either, but they take like two people that and they put them together and like just see what happens, and it's just great.
Must be fun for Martin.
Yeah, like even he must. Help of like, Bronn won't react to Jamie in this way.
Oh, absolutely. Like, well, I mean, he wrote the episode too.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
So, I mean, like, I know he's involved in the show heavily, which is good, because I mean, like, he'd hate for it to get away from the creator.
Yeah. And I know he's told them, you know, where it's going to go and all this stuff in case, you know, something happens to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, that was fantastic. It's way better than having, was it Ilyn Payne or whatever was the one that was helping him in the books?
Yeah. And I've got a funny feeling, though, that the Ilyn Payne stuff... Oh, yeah, see, I can't talk about that.
Well, the actor died.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the actor that played Ilyn Payne died, and that may have been the reason they were just like, well, let's just put Bronn there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure. I may be making stuff up, but I can check.
For anybody listening, I mean, no spoilers because of the differences, but Ilyn Payne was the perfect person to teach Jamie how to fight again, because he couldn't speak. He had no tongue. So he made the best sparring partner, because Jamie could then get better without being revealed as being weak. In this situation, he just has to trust Bronn not to say anything to anybody, as opposed to Ilyn Payne just never being able to.
One thing kind of cool, the actor who played Ilyn Payne was the guitarist and vocalist of Dr. Feelgood.
Nice.
Just a little bit of trivia.
Nice. Are you looking it up now? Like, did he pass
away? Yeah, I wanted to see if I could find something, but I haven't yet.
Okay. Well, while you're looking that up, I will go on my skin-crawling rant.
He is still alive. Continue.
Oh,
is he?
Oh, maybe he just couldn't do it on the show, like be part of the show.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry.
Again, we can talk about it after, because I think I have an idea as to when they might bring Ilyn Payne in. If he is to return, then I think I have an idea. Cool. I cannot stand the douche face that is running Craster's Keep now.
He was in he was one of the main characters in Torchwood.
Okay.
So the whole time I was watching, I was like, who is this guy? He's so, like, like deploy. He's horrible.
Well, he's got these beady little eyes and this skinny little mouth, and just
he was meant to be a good guy in Torchwood, and I couldn't stand him the whole. Like, he's not a good guy. He's terrible.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah.
But like, and he plays a good part in this one. He's terrible.
Oh, you hate him? Yeah.
He's drinking wine out of your Mormon skull.
Yeah. Yeah, no, immediately you're just like, well, I think he was the guy that actually stabbed him. Like, I'd have to go back and watch season three, but I'm pretty sure he was the brother that led the charge.
I think so.
Yeah, and he's an absolute dick, and I can't stand him. As good as it is to have a villain that, you know, you dislike, and then you really want to stomp into the dirt. He kind of bugs me the same way that Egret kind of bugs me.
Okay.
Like, I just find him seedy and skin crawly and just bleh. He's one dimensional. He doesn't really have any mystery to him. Like, you kind of know what he's going to do all the time. He's just going to be violent and an asshole.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like, so there's
you kind of know exactly. Yeah, he's going to do all the despicable stuff.
Yeah, and that's the thing, like, with other villains, like, say, Tywin, you never know when he's going to lash out. And that's what I think makes him so scary, you know, whereas this guy is, like, he's scary in a physical way, but, like, only because he's, for whatever reason, he's a bully and everybody's scared of him. Like, the big guy that he makes fun of could thrash the guy.
Oh, that guy. Yeah,
yeah, so there's the guy with the beard that was sitting at the fire that had to take the meat out to Snow in the cage. Not Snow, Ghost. That had to take the meat out to the direwolf that they captured in the cage. I mean, like, he's twice the other guy's size. I mean, if he had the inclination, he could totally take him. But because the guy's just so aggressive and so in control of everything, no one seems to be able to
resist him. Think of it like a pirate captain.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You just know not to mess with them.
Yeah, I agree.
Everyone took over, you could just, you know, you could mutiny.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is kind of what happened to Jorah Mormont, so.
Yeah.
It can happen to anyone.
Yeah.
He could be next.
Well, then, you know, you never know who's going to mutiny the mutiny. You
know? It's really bad that you don't watch Futurama, because that is something for Futurama. they mutiny and they say, what's the mutiny for? He goes, failure to prevent a mutiny.
Nice.
Really should give it another shot.
Yeah. Yeah, well, next time the Jocelyn's on a Futurama kick, maybe I'll play Hearthstone on the iPad and watch with her.
Do it.
While we're at Craster's Keep, Bran shows up completely unintentionally through some skinwalking, trying to save the baby. Because there's a son that's Craster's last born son. And the heavier guy that we mentioned has to go take him out and leave him in the woods for the White Walkers. And Bran and Jojen hear the baby crying, and they investigate, and they end up being captured by this douche face at Craster's Keep.
Yeah.
And there's something that was confusing to me, and you might be able to answer this. Jojen looks really sick.
I thought the same thing.
Did something happen to him? I don't remember
why. I think he may have gotten sick in the books, and I don't remember why he's sick, or it has something to do with his green dreams.
Yeah, that could be it too.
But I remember thinking that too. I saw him, and I was like, he looks really sweaty and not well.
And I feel like he's being carried or dragged or something. Like, he just, I feel like Hodor or his sister was helping him around.
I think Mira was, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not really sure.
I think
sure.
That is something that did happen in the books, but again, it's been so long, we'll just have to see I'll have to just see how it goes in the show.
Yeah, like, I thought maybe he got shot with an arrow or stabbed and got infected and that he's got a fever, or, like, I don't know if it was that simple or not.
I'm not sure.
No. But something that did strike me as very unique after we go through all the rigmarole of Bran kind of being captured and revealing himself to the guy at Craster's Keep was the White Walkers do come for the baby.
Oh, yeah.
And they take him off, and you think, okay, well, that's what happens. The White Walkers come and take the baby. We knew that. But then a few minutes later, they cut back to the White Walker, who is now much farther north, and approaching what appears to be an ice altar. Like, it's some place we've never seen. It's like an ice mountain.
It was like ice Stonehenge or something.
Yeah, it was really, cool. Really, really cool. And then another White Walker comes out and picks up the baby. And we look at him, and I didn't notice anything particularly fancy about him. He didn't look like he was all that important. You
didn't see the little, like, crowniness?
No, I didn't see the crown.
It was like ice. It almost looked like Bart Simpson hair, but it kind of looked like a
crown. Oh, yeah, I didn't catch that. I'll have to go back and check.
Yeah.
Anyway, so with a fingernail, he kind of he gently pierces the baby's cheek, and the baby's eyes turn into the White Walker blue.
Yeah.
And it starts to go all icy and stuff like that. So we got to see actually how the White Walkers make new White Walkers.
Yeah, it was really cool to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought
so
too. And it
was definitely not something that was ever addressed in the books.
Not as far as I've read, no. No, I don't know whether... I mean, and I don't know whether that's something that, you know, is being pulled from a Martin manuscript from, like, book 6 or 7.
And yeah, I mean, it's possible he's kind of just like, yeah, this could be... throw that in there. I meant to put that in there earlier.
Yeah, yeah. Again, like, maybe he's, you know, helping them buff up the show a little bit.
Yeah, which is... it's a great idea, especially if he's kind of, like, for ideas like that, it's like, I really wish I mentioned this earlier, but I only just thought of it, so let's put that in.
Yeah, that'd be really... It's such a cool opportunity as a creator, you know, to have that kind of freedom and expanse.
Yeah, and you can change things without kind of, like... He can do all this stuff to the TV show, but he doesn't have to alter the books. He doesn't have to, like, Lucas it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where he's, like, ruining something someone already loves. Or not ruining, but changing and altering something someone is already, like, have an attachment to.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can have an attachment to the books, but the attachment to the show is different.
Yeah. Now, do you feel the reveal of what the White Walkers did, that did that ruin any kind of mystery for you? Because, I mean, there's something very chilling, pardon the pun, about a White Walker coming and grabbing a baby boy and just walking off with it.
And having no idea what happened.
You don't know whether they eat them. You don't know whether they, you know, they somehow turn them, which obviously is now the case. But given the rest of the universe in the Game of Thrones show, which is very brutal, your imagination kind of does its worst when they take, you know, an infant.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed not knowing. Because the cool thing about the White Walkers was that you really just knew nothing about them.
Yeah.
Everything about them was either everyone just assumed they didn't exist, they were only in stories, and then people that saw them usually died. So, like, it was kind of, they were so, dark and mysterious and shadowy.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the prologue to the very first book.
Yeah, exactly.
This White Walker attack, and people have got, like, zero idea what the hell's going on. I think the only thing that was a little bit of a spoiler for me was actually watching the fingernail cheek, you know, and the eyes of the baby turning.
Yeah.
They could have easily... I liked the approach. I liked showing that the White Walkers kind of have like a home base sort of idea. And I liked the long, slow trudge of the dead horse and all that kind of...
Oh, that horse was awesome.
Oh, yeah. The effects that they do on those animals is just out of this world. But I feel like the White Walker with the baby could have given it to the White Walker king or the White Walker priest or whatever he was, and they could have just walked away. Like, here's the handoff. The baby is now with the White Walkers at their, you know, their altar. They could have left it there and I would have been like, oh, okay, so that's what happens. Like, I didn't necessarily need to see magic. Think it kind of
went a little too far?
Yeah, well,
is it because you find magic is at a place? Even, well, like, in that, because it's so, like, there's obviously stuff that happens that's kind of magic, but it's never, other than a couple times anyway, it's not super explicit.
Yeah, I didn't feel out of place. It just felt a little bit more like, felt less like HBO and more like ABC.
Okay.
If that makes any sense. Like, it felt like, here is exactly what we're going to do. Well, you know, it's like you mentioned earlier, where Game of Thrones usually leads the horse to water, but lets you take the drink.
Yeah.
And kind of put two and two together. I feel like this is where they didn't do that. They really like, and this is precisely how a White Walker turns a baby with the index finger on the right cheek. And, you know, just,
yeah, it felt, I just could do without it.
Yeah, it felt just a little bit too practical, I guess, maybe.
Well, it's like it's revealing the secret recipe for a character that you really, at the moment, well, for the longest time, know nothing about.
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And this is the thing, is like the way that they look, I mean, they're all adult size. I don't know how tall they actually are next to a person. I feel like they're taller than a normal human.
Well, I will say this. If the moment they show like the White Walker village with the White Walker, like kids running around playing soccer, I'm out.
Yeah.
You're just going to read the books and I'm done.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, how long does it take for a White Walker baby to become an adult? You know, like, I just, it's, it, I kind of look at the White Walkers like, well, they're ice people and they're undead. So they're real old.
Yeah.
I mean.
Don't humanize them for me. It'll ruin it.
Yeah. Just like they look, they're older than trees. Like, I mean, I feel like they've always been around. And if one of them dies, well, one of them dies. But, you know, I kind of figured that they would, from what I can tell, I mean, if the White Walkers are dead and I guess the difference, and this is the confusing part in the books too, is that the White Walkers are different than the whites.
Yes, the whites are the people that were dead and were are not
reanimated. Like, yeah, and so yeah. The bears and the horses and all the things that they have in their army are technically just animal whites, not real White Walker kind of beings. Although that leads to an interesting question about what a White Walker animal might be. Like, can they take a baby bear or a baby, you know, anything, you know, and turn it into their own version? They have
the Midas White Walker touch.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm just trying to think about what kind of fantastical beast they could be riding on. Like, you know,
yeah.
I'm picturing like an elk or some really crazy, you know what a direwolf kind of is as far as fantasy goes for Westeros. I mean, like, trying to think about what other kind of like wild tundra animal, like polar bear or something that would be really cool and really aggressive for them to have as like their assimilated steed.
I'd say a mammoth would be pretty cool too, but at the same time, like, if they didn't show that one, you know, 5 second part of the scene, none of these silly questions would be asked.
That's true. That's true. And we do know mammoths exist because they're part of Mance Rayder's
thing. Yes, them and giants.
Yeah. Did you still imagine a White Walker giant? That'd be insane. God. All right.
Must exist.
Yeah. Yeah. Get on that, HBO. Heard it here first. Wrapping up the episode, which was a long, slow, not boring, but the music for the end of the episode started playing a long time before the episode was over. I felt so this whole end scene with Jamie and Brienne was just like, oh God, like it's just, this can be this long doe-eyed conversation between him batting his eyelashes at her and her batting her eyelashes at him. And I mean, it's good. I enjoy their relationship, but it just felt like it went on forever. Did you find that?
I was actually really looking forward to this scene.
Hmm.
Just because of the whole Oathkeeper thing and like giving the sword, and this is my mission for you to live up to what I didn't live up to and to make good on Catelyn. And I didn't find it dragged out too long, but I was kind of just, I loved that scene. I loved it in the books and I loved how they did it here.
Yeah. I like how in a way Jaime's also protecting Brienne.
Yeah, he's like trying to get her out of the city.
Yeah, and, getting her out of the city. And
but he can't just tell her to leave because she'll be like, no.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? And I mean, he knows that she can protect herself, but he also knows that she's not vicious enough to survive in King's Landing.
Yeah. Like,
she's too good. You know, her sense of honor is too intact, you know, to survive that. So I thought that was really good. I really enjoy the actress that plays Brienne. And
she is gigantic. Is she actually that gigantic?
She's a very tall woman.
Or do they do like a Hagrid type thing?
No. She really is quite tall. I feel like she's 6'4" or something like that. Well, you got to remember that a lot of leading men are not that tall.
No, that's true.
So I don't know, I am curious now that you mentioned it. I thought I looked it up before. I could be wrong though. A lot of times on IMDb.
She's 6'3".
Is she 6'3"? Yeah, so she's taller than I am.
Yeah, Gwendolyn Christie.
Yeah, yeah. And something that I find really interesting is, it's a weird thing, like, when they first revealed her fighting for Renly in the tournament, like, she's tall, but they make her pretty homely looking. Like, the way that her hair is done and the way that they treat her when she's out in the field, she doesn't really seem all that attractive. But then in King's Landing in this season, like, I feel like she's changed in her look and changed in the way she carries herself. And I feel like she's a much more attractive woman, which is weird because it doesn't, it seemed like I was like, what camera trickery did you pull on me before that I didn't catch on to this? And what I find it does, which is, I don't know whether it's just a basic stereotype that I'm falling victim to, but it makes her feel not softer, but you get her innocence more clearly at King's Landing.
Oh, absolutely.
If that makes any sense, does that make... Yeah, I feel like that's what's coming across, is that you really get kind of her naivete at King's Landing more than you did when she was out, you know, bringing Jaime wherever he's going or reporting to Catelyn Stark.
Yeah, and although she didn't look too innocent when she was standing in that epic armor.
Yeah, geez, doesn't that look sharp?
That was cool.
Yeah, no, I think they really did a good job with making her now look important and a bit of a figurehead for the show. You know, like she's got that kind of weight.
She's
now
the moral compass of the show.
Yeah, or certainly for this season, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I really enjoy the way that the actor handles the awkwardness, you know, that she feels, because obviously she's got a lot of feelings for Jaime. And they do a good job.
I think he knows that though.
Oh, he absolutely does. But they don't play it off as really clumsy teenage awkward. Like, it's just silence.
Yeah.
They just kind of stare at one another. It's an adult awkwardness. Something that did bug me about the books is voice actor Roy Dotrice, who does the reading. The way that he makes Brienne sound, he makes her sound like a lumbering moron.
Oh, poor Brienne.
Yeah, she sounds dumb. Like, she sounds like an idiot. And it's too bad. He makes her sound like just a lummox. And it's much better done in the show by having her be quiet, but shy, like not shy, but quiet, but awkward, and bound by duty, and not like stupid, because he really does. It does make her sound dumb, and all the lines and all the missions and what she does are the same. It's just the way that he kind of delivers her lines sounds very lowbrow, and uneducated, which is weird because she's the daughter of. Is it the Sapphire Isle?
Yeah.
The
Sapphire Isle.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't actually know the guy's name though.
yeah, I don't remember either. I think that's about it. I mean, they leave the show with her riding off into the distance with Pod, her new squire.
Yeah, so he's growing to be one of my favorite side characters.
Yeah, he's pretty stoked too.
Yeah, he's like, this is sweet.
This is a good deal. Step up.
And when he looked, he's like, sir.
He calls her sir, yeah.
She just looked at him.
M'lady, right. Okay, this is going to take a little bit.
Yeah.
I'll get better, I promise. Yeah, no, that was great. Any final thoughts on episode 4?
No, just I'm really excited how, again, just all the scenes were great and how they're just, you know, they're building up to something.
Mm-hmm.
You just, you don't know what yet, because who knows? They're just kind of, it seems like everything's just fair game now, right? They just, it's yeah. all going to be what happened in Storm of Swords, apparently.
Yeah, and they have enough going as far as separate storylines and separate people and locations to follow that they cannot fit them all into one show.
No, like impossible.
If we did, I don't remember stopping by with Arya and the Hound. I don't think we saw them in episode 4.
It's the same conundrum that Martin had with the actual books when the fourth book was going to be 1,600 pages or something.
Yeah, and we didn't check in with the Prince of Dorne either.
No.
Right? So, I mean, there's a lot of kind of loose ends flying around. So
we do know that he's going to be a judge.
Yes, that's right.
On Tyrion's trial.
On Tyrion's trial, yeah. Oh, we do. I do remember that. Right on. Well, we're running a little bit long because we had to cram a couple of episodes into one show. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on the CitadelCafe.com/live. Our mobile audio stream is provided by AlphaGeekRadio.com. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can download the episode directly from the website, CitadelCafe.com, or just look for us by name on iTunes. Subscribe with your favorite podcast downloader and never miss a beat. You can contact the show and correct all of the mistakes that Mike and I made about Game of Thrones lore, names, places, and people at thesizzlecafe@gmail.com or send us a tweet on Twitter or a message on Facebook. Again, just search for the show by name and you can find us no problem. The Gamers Inn is coming up this Friday evening at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on amove.tv. Join Jocelyn and Ryan as they break down their opinions on the latest in gaming news and what they're playing. The gamersandpodcast.com, sorry, not the, just Gamers and Podcast, there's no the in front of it, or amove.tv/TGI is where you go for details on that show. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am up to online at joelduggan.com, and please do check out my Patreon page. That's for my comic work, Starcrossed, and you can find that at patreon.com/joelduggan. Follow me on Twitter with just my name, and that's it. Mike, where can people find you online?
Only on Twitter.
The one place, right?
That is it.
You're a mono-social guy.
Pretty much, quite simple. Just at Mike O'Dandy.
You have been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. Did you have an internet pick this week to share, or did you have...
Give yours. I don't actually have one.
You don't actually have one? I don't have one either. So that's good. We'll wrap it up right here. Keeps it simple, as opposed to keep it secret. Keep it safe.
And we should keep it safe, though.
Well, I don't know about secret. I want people to listen to the episode.
We'll just keep it safe.